look for any type of suspicious vehicles or any type of ICE activity so that we can document and then alert the community so that our people have the chance to defend themselves, protect themselves and their families from being kidnapped. And so this is peaceful work. We don't advocate for violence. We don't break any laws. We have a legal team who's advised us on what we can and cannot do. So we're really clear about what we're doing. We train people and we're all over Los Angeles, and there isn't a corner in the city where an ICE raid can happen where we won't know about it in less than 5 minutes. And we can deploy our members to go to document and to defend the community. That's the type of work that Amanda was doing heroically. That's the type of work that we're doing every day. As a teacher right now, we're getting ready to go back to school. This Thursday, school starts in Los Angeles, and there's a lot of fear on the part of students, parents, and teachers. And so we have to get our city ready, because we know that these ICE raids, although they did slow down a bit, they have continued, and we have to defend ourselves. We have to be organized in case anything happens near one of our schools.
We only have 20 seconds, Ron. I just talked to California Attorney General Bonta, who's brought dozens of lawsuits against Trump. Yet your organization is accusing the California police of working with ICE.
Absolutely. You know, while the legal folks are fighting in the courtrooms, we're fighting in the streets. And while they're having winning battles in the courtroom, we're winning battles in the streets. We know that what's happening right now with the LAPD and sheriffs in Los Angeles is complete collaboration with these ICE raids. They protect, they
we're
do logistical
have to leave
protection
it there, but we're
going to
do
operations.
A Spanish interview at democracynow.org. Ron Goches with Unión del Barrio. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming online at KBOO.FM.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at KBOO.FM. This month's executive committee will be held Thursday, August 14th at 5:30 p.m. Meetings are held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on the website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
Are you a fan of early rock and roll, doo-wop, rhythm and blues, and 70s rock? If so, The Roots of Rock and Roll is the show for you, and KBOO Portland is the place to be Friday afternoons at 3. Dale Farr will give you a history lesson from the birth of rock and roll through the 50s and 60s. And Ray Bodwell will mine the 60s and 70s for the deep cuts, hidden gems, and variety that you won't hear on generic classic rock stations. So tune in to The Roots of Rock and Roll, Fridays at 3 p.m. on KBOO Portland. Your community radio station.
Good morning. And you are listening on this Monday morning. Where are we? It's not October. It's August. August 11th, 2025. And this is More Talk Radio on your community radio station, KBOO-FM. 90.7 on your FM dial, 91.9 in Hood River, 104.3 in Corvallis, and via the World Wide Web is KBOO.FM. I am Cecil Prescott, and I am happy that you have taken some time from your life to spend some time in this community. There is so much that is happening in and around us. But first, look around and be aware of where you are and take a breath. Take a deep breath. There's so much that is happening all around us that it seems, quite frankly, overwhelming sometimes. And nevertheless, we are called to do what we are called to be. And I am reminded, and I'll share with you a quote that I shared last week from Walter Brueggemann. When there's so much going on, Walter Brueggemann reminds us, and this is a quote, that like the ancient prophets, we are dispatched back to the good work entrusted to us. It is the work of peacemaking. It is the work of truth telling. It is the work of justice doing. It is good work, but it requires our resolve to stay it, even in the face of the forces to the contrary that are sure to prevail for a season. Words from the late Walter Brueggemann. We are all called into the roles of, much like the ancient prophets, and we are called to do good work. And in a world when there seems to be overwhelming with so much grief and so much hardship, I need to be reminded, I think we all need to be reminded of the call to do that which is good. Even as I speak now, the president is having a press conference where he is announcing that he is deploying the National Guard to take control of D.C. police. He's assigned the Attorney General, as seems to be the president's habits of assigning members of his administration multiple tasks. So the Attorney General is now tasked with to take over the Metropolitan Police Department and the National Guard's troop that will be assigned to the nation's capital. So those are just some of the latest. There is so much. I wanted to begin this morning by not talking about the president and the takeover of Washington, D.C., but about what we are called to do and how we are called to do and stand up and to resist. And I would like, if you would consider, to share with me your thoughts about how to resist authoritarianism in this regime. How do we resist it locally, statewide, nationally, and indeed internationally? Because as we see this move to authoritarianism, as I've stated before, is not a local phenomenon, and it will not vanish with the next midterm election. This massive effort has been underway for decades, and to pull ourselves away from it requires effort and determination, because there is so much to do. And so a question I have for all of us, and maybe for me as well. I shared with a friend of mine that when I was a boy, one of my tasks on national holidays was to take the U.S. flag and unfurl it and raise it on the pole on top of our house. So that was my duty, and it was something that I appreciated. But what are we called to do in terms of responding when it seems to be overwhelming, that things that we once thought of was able to keep us safe? No longer. Particularly, where are those institutions, the guardrails of democracy, that so quickly caved, and were they never strong enough to prevent this what seems like a takeover, and you know, for many people, in 6 months, as I suggested, it's been a long time going. But for most people, it's been, you know, 7-8 months since the inauguration of the president. But where are those institutions? I mean, even speaking of the levels of government, those institutions of government, the three branches, the courts and the legislature, they've all seemed to have caved in on the federal landscape. But the other institutions, the free press, or the press, where are those voices? And we see that they are caving in as corporations take over institutions such as communications and news information, and we see a narrowing of independent media, which is a reminder for all of us to could support independent media such as KBOO, because it is going away, so it seems. So where are those institutions, whether it is the legislature or the judiciary, whether those institutions such as the press, whether it's those institutions such as educational institutions, they all seem to be caving in so quickly. So where do we go from here? I want to suggest to all of us that there are opportunities to speak out, and there are ways in which people are doing amazing things. Last week, before we last week during our program, I mentioned how some mayors throughout the nations are standing up, and I raised a question in terms of Portland city mayor, who said that, well, we have to cave in, and because we need those federal funds. And I highlighted a couple of other mayors who said that they would not do that. They would not cave in. And last Monday, the NAACP Portland branch president sent a letter to the mayor that I'd like to share with you. And after I'll read this short letter, I'll ask you to comment. How do we resist? How do we resist authoritarianism? Here is what James Posey, the president of the Portland NAACP, wrote to Mayor Keith Wilson. I'm writing to you as the president of the Portland NAACP to express our deep disappointment and firm opposition to your recent executive order curtailing the city commitment to diversity, equity, and inclusion. This directive echoes the troubling trend of recent federal actions aimed at silencing necessary efforts to acknowledge and prepare the harms caused by systemic racism and discriminatory public policy. At this moment, Portland's leadership appears to have chosen short-term political compliance against long-standing community values, a decision that erodes public trust and our city moral foundation. Unfortunately, this action fits into a broader historical pattern. For decades, successive administrations, from Mayor Bud Clark onward, have issued proclamations condemning racism while failing to follow through with policies that truly address disparity faced by Black and Brown communities. Your decision to retreat from DEI continues that legacy of symbolic gestures with limited substantive impact. It is also disingenuous to present disparity studies as a substitute for actions. These studies, though numerous, have really translated into meaningful, sustained change. Rather, they highlight how inadequate our efforts have been, even before these recent rollbacks. Your executive order sets a dangerous precedent. It suggests that Portland is willing to yield to federal pressure, thereby normalizing political coercion as a valid means of dismantling equity-centered initiatives. True leadership requires courage in the face of adversity, not capitulations. Once we compromise our values under external threats, we open the door to further erosion of our city's commitment to justice. We are equally concerned about the disproportionate burden this decision places on Black and Brown communities. Too often, DEI frameworks prioritize the advancement of already privileged groups, particularly white women, while minimizing the distinct and ongoing challenges faced by communities of color. This rollback further disenfranchises those who are already most marginalized. If the city is truly committed to fairness, it must ask those who have historically benefited the most to contribute more, especially in times of financial strain. This moment calls for leadership that invests in building local capacity and resilience, not one that binds Portland more accomplished to the whims of federal funding. When we tether our values to federal purse strings without developing sustainable local strategies, we enter into a transaction that will surely cost us more than we gain. Therefore, we respectfully call on your administration and the City Council to convene an open public town hall to hear directly from the people of Portland. The Portland NAACP stands ready to support the organization and facilitation of this forum. Major decisions such as these must be guided by transparency, accountability, and the voices of our community. Sincerely, James Posey, Portland NAACP President. So that's one response to of one local organization to the apparent caving in of the city government to the federal government. What are ways in which people are resisting locally, statewide, nationally, and internationally? What are some of your thoughts? Our numbers are 503-231-8187. Let's go to a caller who's been waiting for a while, and I'm sure they have something to say. Good morning, Santiago.
Good morning. You know, it's, you know, Keith Wilson is, you know, it's, but you know, but I've come to expect that, especially when it comes to white men, you know, because at the end of the day, I mean, America protects white men, and, you know, and, you know, he's going to do what all white men, what most white men do in the face of adversity, you know, they just cave. And it's not surprising. It's disappointing, but not surprising. You know, one of the ways that I tell people we need to resist is one way we resist is by rejecting American mythology and adopting the most current view of reality as it is. You know, a lot of people are despairing right now, especially when you come from the liberal side, because they believe all of these myths about what America is.
Right.
You know, America is the land of the free, blah, blah, blah. But it's never been. It's only ever, you know, the only rights that we have, the only democracy that we have is democracy that was fought for, that was bled for, that was, you know, that was died for on behalf of the marginalized. You know, the marginalized and yes. And the downtrodden. You know, they've, you know, a lot of folks want to reference the Revolutionary War, but there was nothing revolutionary about it. You know, it was American slave owners versus British slave owners. Mm. You know, the American capitalists versus British capitalists. You know, America won, but it didn't change the ultimate outcome of those who were in the lowest rung. So I talk about, like, you know, civil rights struggles, human rights struggles, women's suffrage, things like that. Those are the only true rights that make this a democracy, if it ever was a democracy at all.
Right. Yes. And a point that you said that I want to emphasize is that any, you know, so-called rights is the results of struggle, blood, sweat, and tears.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah.
So no, it's that, and that's true, you know, and that's why it's so easy for a lot of these white guys to give up, because that, you know, they've had rights without fighting for them. I mean, they might have been slightly inconvenienced or even hurt by some of the stuff that's come down the pike, but it's not ever been the same thing.
Sure. You know, and you remind me, you know, when you said that, you know, these things that are granted them by privilege, that suddenly when that's snatched away from you from privilege, then equity sounds like, oh my gosh, they're coming after me.
Mm-hmm. 100%. And I think that's another thing that we need to recognize in this moment, is that so many, that, you know, this, people were surprised about how many, especially like older white folks, have been involved in a lot of the struggles. And the truth of the matter is that, like, you know, I have older white liberal friends who have literally told me outright before this moment that they weren't interested in getting political because all they want to do is get their pension and retire, not interested in the slightest in what's going on in the world. And now that's being taken away from them, and they don't have a choice. Well, they do have a choice, and a lot of them are making a terrible choice. But, you know, it's that kind of apathy that, you know, that's led us to this moment. And I think another way of resisting this moment, I mean, speaking of which, is we got to learn who our enemies are. And when I say enemies, that means call outs. That means, like, we got to name, you got to name the devil to exorcise him, as they say. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and we don't do a good, especially those of us who consider, well, I mean, leftists do, but liberals really don't. You know, we have to stop fetishizing this reaching across the aisle, that we can reach across the aisle, you know, on principle to organize with people who voted in fascism. You know, we have to be able to call, you know, what it is, and not just the conservative fascists, but the liberal fascists too. The ones who through apathy and both sidesism have allowed for this sort of like politically demonic presence to take place.
Yeah, but let me ask you, since you raised it sounds as, you know, I think I affirm much of what you're saying. A question I have is it's not like a both sidesism or both are the same, but the reality is that half the people in the last three elections, national elections, half of those have voted for Donald Trump. So it isn't like there's, you can ignore half the population of the voting population. No. So how do we, engage them? I mean, isn't like in a meaningful way? And how do we respond to what you mentioned earlier in terms of apathy that seems to overwhelm a lot of people?
Well, you address the Trump voters by, first of all, the way that I've done it is the first is that you have to affirm the fact that there is in fact something wrong. If conservative voters have done anything that could even be slightly correct, or at least conservative politicians, they actually name the fact that there's something wrong. Notice that, you know, throughout the campaign, Democrats did not once name that there was something wrong. And if they did, it was Trump being a fascist, but that's all kind of gone out the window since they want to work with him. But the point is that, you know, that they've been willing to name the fact that there's something wrong. But the thing that you have to pull them out of this place where it's some mystical cabal of, you know, like Illuminati Jewish space laser stuff.
Right.
You tell them that, like, the people messing up this world have names and addresses. You know, these are real people. They don't exist in some vacuum that isn't connected to the world. You have to ground them in something.
Yes, I think the point you made is very important. The point you just made in terms of liberals or need to acknowledge the reality that there is something wrong and this is what the other side, well, they have been saying in a lot. And so I read a recent article who was talking about the New York City campaign for mayor, and they made a point very similar to what you made in terms of they stating that Mamdani actually talked about those concerns that impacted people, you know, livability issues. And so they were somewhat surprised that why people are attracted to that message.
Yes, absolutely. And that's the main thing. You know, it's like the concern, you know, the Republicans will name they'll say that there's a problem, but then all of a sudden it's immigrants, it's a Jewish space laser. There's all these things that are not connected to reality, but it gives them a punching bag. Whereas, like, when you're coming at it from the left, from the not liberal, but from the left, you're coming at it by actually naming what it is, by saying we need a rent freeze, by saying that we need, to get, that the politicians who allowed this stuff to happen actually need to be held accountable before we give them any of our votes. And you got to give them something tangible to work with. And then the other thing, too, is recognizing that, you know, it's taken 80 years for conservatives to reverse everything, because ultimately this all goes back to the social fascism of FDR, that what he did ultimately discriminated against black and brown folks, you know, and was not really that much of a help to us, but it was a really big help to the white working class. But even that was too much for wealthy business owners, to the point that they actually tried to assassinate him and replace him with their own American fascist and Smedley Butler. This all goes back to that moment, and it's taken them 80 years to reverse this. So these guys have been willing to take loss after loss after loss after loss without losing their eye on the prize. And that's something that we need to take into this. Like that one brother you were quoting saying, you know, they might win for a season. They might win for several seasons. Mm-hmm. We have seen this in history, but we need to have that long suffering. You know, like Martin Luther King talked about the difference between an if faith and a though faith. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of if faith people who are willing to just give up if they don't get what they want in the next midterm. We need to have people who say, even if I don't get what I want in the next midterm, I've still got my eye on the prize. I still have that faith in the masses. I still have that faith in the people. We need to have that kind of revolutionary optimism that Mao talked about. I mean, look at what Mao overcame in order to create the revolution in China. It was a protracted war.
Oh, thank you.
This is things that we actually have to look at, especially as black and brown folks, as queer and trans folks, and people who cross the lattice in between. We have to keep our eyes on that prize, and we need to create communities of support that allow us to be able to have that sort of long-suffering, long-fighting attitude.
So much. Thank you so much for what you're saying and for reminding us in that the importance of community and also the importance of the strength of community and knowing the continued commitment to the struggle for justice. Thank you for your work, and thank you for your call out to all of us to continue the struggle. You are listening to More Talk Radio on your community radio station, KBOO. Our numbers here are 503-231-8187. As the president, let me see if his news conference is over yet, but announcing the takeover of, you know, Washington, D.C., the police, continuing to create trouble in California, things are what's happening in Texas. The bold, which it seems to me a shame, but it's evident, just the bold attempt to dismantle those fabrics that we thought were essential to our democracy. That at one point people would be criticized for, but being unashamedly aggressive, mean-spirited, and harmful to communities is what is evident now. And now, as much as any time, we need to respond. So a question I asked earlier, how do we respond locally, nationally, internationally, statewide? What are those attempts that inspire you or direct you in terms of addressing the issues that we face? Those are some things that I am throwing out to you. Let me hear some of your responses. Our numbers are 503-231-8187. Let's hear what our next caller, Tuasi, has to say. Good morning, Tuasi. What are your thoughts this morning?
Good morning. There's a few things that I was thinking about. You know, obviously, with Posse Comitatus, we're not supposed to have to worry about the military being deployed against us.
Mm.
But we can see in real time how that's a legitimate concern,
yeah,
that the military will be deployed against us. So, you know, how do we respond in a rational manner,
mm-hmm,
to the world's most powerful military being deployed against us? Well, personally, I was raised up with pacifism, so I feel like, you know, running at the baton that's poised to strike you might not be the most prudent and effective and, you know, humanistic response.
Mm-hmm.
So I tend to think that feeding each other is the best possible response.
You said feeding?
With an F as in Frank.
Oh, okay. Go ahead. Yeah.
Because everybody eats, no matter what your political affiliation it is, you have to eat. Mm-hmm. And throughout time, we see authoritarians use hunger as a weapon. You can see it right now
in Gaza,
occupied Palestine.
Yeah.
So the colonizer will surround the province and cut off food.
Yes.
And you're probably better versed in specific historical terms, but I think it was Leningrad where they starved people to death.
That sounds familiar.
You know, you can reflect further back into Roman times when the same tactic was used.
Mm-hmm.
If you look as a thoughtful person at who controls the flow of food into your community, you'll see how simple it is for them to stop feeding you.
Right, right.
And once they stop feeding you, it's pretty easy to compel whatever behavior, even if it's running into a war zone.
Right.
So my solution to fascism, you know, mm-hmm, regardless of the effectiveness of armed resistance,
mm-hmm,
the solution that I think is important and what I tend to focus on is making sure the people around me have enough to eat.
Okay.
Because very, it's what I'm important. Good at.
Yes.
And it honestly feels good to feed somebody, even if they're somebody who I disagree with, that, mm-hmm, I think their beliefs are horrible. I still don't want them to go hungry.
All right.
You know? And so, but yeah, it also tends to be a very delineating line that you can put in the sand.
Yes.
If you're having a conversation with someone who happens to be a horrible person, and you say, look, I would feed your child and make sure they ate if something happened to you, because I believe everybody should be able to eat. And then you can see in their face the humanity or the lack of humanity, and they have to deal themselves the moral harm or recognize that they're no longer comfortable with that moral harm.
Yes.
So, yes. You know, because it's immoral to starve somebody.
Yes.
And that's the plan in the USA, whether we see it right now or not. Native American people have suffered through it.
Mm-hmm.
Currently, yes. Indigenous people receive commodities because of the intentional starvation program that's been so effectively imposed that the way that Indigenous communities, many of them, survive is through federal commodities. And the president is stopping a lot of those commodities.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, hunger is on the immediate horizon. It's something like $400 million shortfall the state of Oregon has to feed people. And if you want to watch fascism rule, then you'll see desperate people turn to fascism because they're starving.
Yes.
And if you can put food on the table now, put food in your cupboards now, plant seeds, build fruit forests. There should never be a development in our city that isn't incorporating fruit forests. If we're a progressive city, why don't we have fruit forests and instead we have an overabundance of useless trees? There's no reason that we shouldn't have chestnut trees all over Portland.
Mm-hmm.
There's no reason that we shouldn't have cherry trees, plum trees, apple trees. The only reason we have a lack of food is because fascism uses hunger as a form of compliance. So do not starve, please. Feed each other. If you have to throw your body on the machine to cause it to stop, that's, you know, that's what you have to do. But for me, I'm going to feed people.
Thank you.
Because I feel like, and this is something I've been saying for about almost a decade. The revolution is a fruit tree.
Thank you.
Not an AK-47.
Thank you so much for sharing what it means to live for others and putting into practice first identifying, recognizing that other person is there and that we are called to be there for one another. And by providing food, by feeding people, we are doing revolutionary acts. So thank you for reminding us of that and the need to continue to do that. And also, you know, that seems so gentle, but, you know, in so many places, and you mentioned Gaza, it's on the people's attention around the world, but that's just an example of how starvation is being used as a weapon of war, and a response to these things is feeding people. So thank you for those very important reminders and call to action to us. And you're listening to More Talk Radio here on your community radio station, KBOO-FM. I'm Cecil Prescott, and our numbers are 503-231-8187. I began this conversation this morning by tossing out some concerns I have in terms of how do we respond to fascism, authoritarianism, locally, nationally, statewide, internationally, and wherever. And those who we've had the opportunity to share this morning shared some very important ways in how we respond. Our last caller said that we need people need to be fed, that we are called to feed one another. A response is feeding and all need food. And the recognition how food or keeping food away from people is a means of war. It's a means of destroying people. The last caller, reminded us of how people are starving, and that we need to respond. So one way in which we can do it is by feeding one another, whether that. An earlier caller reminded us of apathy that surrounds so many people, and the call to open our perspectives and see the reality that maybe the story that we have been shared with us over the years is may not be accurate in terms of the American mythology about who we are as a society. And so we must call and resist the tendency to ignore one another or to fall victim to apathy. There are things that we are called to do that we need to do. What is it that you are called to do, and what are ways in which you are resisting? I shared with you the letter from the Portland NAACP to the mayor of Portland, responding to the mayor's executive order, complying with the president's anti-DEI executive order. And the Portland NAACP responded to it by stating, that is not leadership. That is not leadership. A question I have for you, and you might would appreciate if you might call and respond, is, but what is leadership? What if you are caught between the proverbial rock and a hard place? And that will be the argument you hear from, I assume, from the mayor of Portland, that these are federal funds, that they are needed, and somehow we will manage it. And sometimes when you have to, like, quite literally feed, and you're responsible for the welfare of people, sometimes you have to do things that you would not want to do. But those are hard choices we have to make. What are some of your thoughts? 503-231-8187. Let's go to our next caller and hear what She the Spirit has. Good morning.
Good morning. A luta continua. That means the struggle continues. As everyone knows, that was raised up by Winnie and Nelson Mandela during the apartheid movement. I wanted to add something to Tuasi's insightful comment about planting seeds. When I was in Southern California, we would have these kind of meetings about what we would do in the future in case the revolution began. And in addition to what he said about planting seeds, I want to add that we should also store seeds for the future, the good seeds, you know, not the ones that are have the modified genetics in them. My other comment was to add to what Santiago said. Bob Marley has been singing now. He died about 40 years ago, but in some of his majestic songs, he warned us about collective security and what to do, because he also was a man who studied history. And collective security, we need to be storing up bins, you know, barrels of commodities and foods like rice and wheat and beans and things that can endure time.
Okay.
And every community, say, somebody may want to decide a community is five blocks, a few blocks, or more blocks.
Mm-hmm.
And each of those communities, everyone pitches in advance to buy these staples of food, you know, and necessities and bottled water.
Mm-hmm.
So that when the revolution begins and they do start withdrawing food from our communities as that dictator Benjamin Netanyahu is doing, and it will be prepared. And I also wanted to say my idea.
Hold on 1 second. I just wanted to make sure, because I was writing down what you just said, and I just wanted to make sure, because a point you made, you talked about community, and you express it so well, because you define community, it may, what I interpret, it may differ. You know, your community might be, you know, your block, it may encompass more people or less people, but it's something, it's who you're working with, and that's important. So thank you for sharing that. Please continue.
Yeah, no problem. The community will be determined by the people in the community.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I said, it could be a few blocks, it could be a couple of blocks, it could be 10 blocks or more.
Yes.
But those people need to get together right now, you know, right after I hang up this phone. They need to get together and talk about how much of staple foods that can endure time, how much they're going to buy and provide and store away. And there's a long list of products that can last throughout the, you know, for I don't want to say a millennium, but for
yes,
a long time.
For a long
decades,
time, yes.
Even. So,
I appreciate, go
the
ahead.
The other suggestion I had was Exodus. Bob Marley sings about this, and I have every song he's ever recorded before he died. And Bob Marley has insightful history to African American peoples, and what he's been singing about is the Exodus that was coming. In fact, he even has a song called Exodus if you want to check it out. But I have the album. And he has other songs on there, and I have all of his albums, and I've been listening for 40 years. So one of the things that I think will help us will be to make Africa great again. That's our own mega movement. We need to start our mega movement. There are 54 countries in Africa, the motherland. There are more Europeans on our continent in Mother Africa than anywhere else. Because Mother Africa is the wealthiest continent on the planet. And we need to start thinking about making the exodus out of Babylon, because we're going to be dealing with the force of evil that has been discussed for over thousands of years by all of the prophets.
Okay.
They have been warning us that Trump was coming.
Okay.
And it's going to be worse than what we could ever imagine. So I think that those of us who are not afraid of other African people, and those of us who have not been taught, or who have been taught and will not listen to the advice that African people are our enemies, they should see Mother Africa as part of our salvation. We need to exodus home. There's 54 countries. We can pick a country. There's so much land. Africa has so much land that the reason why there's so many Europeans over there.
And we're running close.
Let me just finish this.
We're near the end of time, and there's someone behind you. But continue.
Let me just finish this last statement, Cecil, please.
Yes,
don't
I'm.
Cut me off.
Yes, no, you've
okay,
been speaking.
I need to say this, and then I'm going to hang up, and I won't call back for a long time, okay? Because you have a tendency to want to cut me off. The reason why I'm bringing this up is because Europeans have more land over there than Africans have. That's how South Africa got started. We need to claim what wealth our motherland has for us, her children. And that's going to be the safest place, and we can pick any one of those countries. Okay?
Hey, thank you so much. All right.
Make Africa great again.
Okay, that's I never thought of MAGA that way. But hey, thank you so much, Sheet the Spirit. You're listening to More Talk Radio here on your community radio station, KBOO-FM. I'm Cecil Prescott, and our last caller was reminding us of the need for community, the need to be there for one or the other, and she reminded us of Bob Marley, Exodus, and the need to build, to raise up Africa. Let's go to our next caller who's been waiting. Tangent, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Yes, really well. I'm just going to run a few things down. And this is how I cope. And it's not just simply like making a joke. The joke shows through the lie, okay? It exposes the lie. So what I'm going to start with is, just jump on the MAGA. We could do this, make America groan again. But no, I was thinking about this. Just hang on. Gulf of America? How about instead of D.C., it'll be D.T., District of Trumpia, or Delirious Tremens, however. And I like to quote, oh, wait a minute, just because the other thing is that, a nuclear reactor on the moon, where there is how much water to cool this reactor? What is it going to power? So, there's that one. Now I'm going to quote, because a lot of this started with Reagan, and I'm going to quote the first broad, because I couldn't call her a lady, and I'm just going to paraphrase and parody at the same time. And I'm just saying, just say no to thugs and folderol. You like that?
You lost me, but okay.
Oh, just say no to thugs and folderol.
Okay.
Trump is a thug. It was drugs and alcohol. You remember? Come on. And the folderol is this nukes on the moon, Gulf of America, all this.
Okay. Well, thank you. Thank you so much, Tangent.
One thing ask, because Santiago was talking about revolution and capitalism, between American and British capitalism. Well, in the First World War, in the beginning, up to 80% of the British shells were duds. They did not explode, up to 80%. And I just made a joke that German capitalism was greater than British capitalism.
Okay, Tangent, thank you so much for your thoughts and for your perspectives this morning. You're listening to More Talk Radio here on your community radio station, KBOO-FM. We began our discussion this morning by me thinking about, there is so much. How do we resist authoritarianism? Which is, wake up. It is here. It isn't, I've often heard for weeks, months ago, that we're losing our democracy, or democracy is at a crossroad. We are in danger. Well, we need to stop those warning signals, because it is here. We are living in that reality now. So, it's as if we are living in a world that many of us did not think we were prepared to live in. And as a caller reminded us earlier, perhaps we need to take off of those glasses which miscolor the world that we are living in. Maybe we need to understand our history as it is not as we might imagine it to be. And that includes the good, the bad, and the ugly. And when we do that, we recognize that, as an earlier caller also reminded us, that American society is not perfect. It has never been perfect, and that people have struggled all the time, and that we continue to struggle, and we need to continue to resist. So what are we called to do? We are called to be those who speak out and to partner with those in our community who are struggling. So let's continue the struggle. Let us continue the work that we are called to do. Let me remind you of the institutions we have, and they are falling apart, or so they seem. But as Walter Brueggemann reminded us, and I began our program this morning, like the ancient prophets, we are dispatched back to the good works entrusted to us. It is the work of peace making. It is the work of truth telling. It is the work of justice doing. It is good work, but it requires our resolve to stay it, even in the face of the forces to the contrary that are sure to prevail for a season. And let's get our last caller in. Arthur, good morning, Arthur.
Good morning, Cecil. I was at the local superstore here, at the grocery store, and I noticed the fresh lettuce aisle in the produce section. One shelf was completely empty. Then I went over to the meat place, and I was told by the meat employee there, that one of the packing plants, the meat packing plants, had shut down production. That's why this part of the shelf in the meat section was empty also. See, that's what happens when you lock up a bunch of brown people for no reason. And I'll let you comment and go out on the air with that. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Arthur. And for reminding us the reality of the actions of this administration and the impact. You know, slowly people are realizing they're being impacted by this administration's policies, its economic policies. It's rough anti-human policies. It's Nazi-like activities. We are realizing it, and so people are slowly waking up and responding, and that's the work we are called to do, remembering the work of those who went before us, who continue on in spite of the odds against them. Let us remember those who are suffering in our midst, and as our callers reminded us, things we need to do. Arthur, thank you for reminding us. And Tangent, thank you for your words. She the Spirit, thank you for reminding us of community, and Bob Marley telling us about collective security. Thank you to Tuasi by telling us what pacifism means. How do we resist? By feeding people. And Santiago, I appreciate you for telling us and reminding us to resist the American ideology, and that we are called to respond in action. There's so much work to do, and when you want to despair, look to your neighbor, look to your friend, look, as She the Spirit reminded us, to build and strengthen community, because in the end, that's all we have, and that's all we can do. Let us look, let us hold on to hope, let us hold on to our joy, and let us remember that we are in this together. When people are calling out for justice, let us respond with love. When people are filled with hate, let us respond with love. When people are grieving, let us respond with love. We are called to do this and so much more in our community. Take care of yourself, take care of your community, and keep hoping. Keep struggling. There's so much work to do. I'm Cecil Prescott, and thank you so much. I will speak with you next time. This has been your program.
This is KBOO Portland, listener-powered, non-corporate community radio.
On the next episode of NeuroEmergent, I talk with Leah Blankenship, founder of the Neurodiversity Alliance at the University of Oregon. Go Ducks!
One thing I hear from so many of my ADHD students all the time is like, if I